everyone, and welcome to episode 115 of Connectivity. This week we have one big segment for you, and then one little extra bonus segment at the end. The big segment this week is all about our 2013 Games of the Year. That features myself, Neil, Zach, and Alex. And after the outro, we have a Doctor Who Christmas special recap with myself, Nicholas, and Amanda. Enjoy. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Connectivity. I'm Scott Thompson. Today I have Alex with me.
Hi.
Zach Miller. And Neil Ronahan.
Hi.
Or wait, or would this be better? Hi, I'm Daisy.
There you go.
That's pretty good. And today we're talking about our games of the year. In traditional
the
fashion.
The goaties, if you
Yeah,
will.
The goaties. The connectivities. That doesn't really work. I mean, it works too well, so it doesn't work. In traditional fashion, at least I think it's traditional fashion. I can't really remember back a year. We're going to do our top three games to appear on Nintendo platforms, and then we will do one non-Tendo game, so a game from any other platform.
I think Carl is responsible for that pun.
Non-Tendo?
I mean, like, it's been done before, but he's why it's here.
I like it. I've always liked
I
it.
I always liked it, too.
I like Totes McGoaties.
I'm not as big on that one.
Yeah.
Oh.
So we are going to start with our own Zach Miller. Zach,
hi.
What is your number three game of 2013?
Number three game of 2013 is, no surprise here, Senran Kagura.
Really? That cracked wow. The top three.
It did, mainly because I didn't play that many Nintendo games this year. But hey, it's like I said last time, it's kind of a mindless action game. It has what I like in it. There you go. And I can just marathon it while I watch the feud.
I love, like, when did this... Have you always called it the feud? Or was this something that developed over time?
No, it's always been the feud.
Okay.
And have you always been a really big Family Feud fan?
Only when Steve Harvey started.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you always been a big Steve Harvey fan?
I like his comedy, but... okay. But when he started hosting The Feud, I mean, it was like a whole new show. It's real.
Yeah.
Why are we talking about The Feud instead of Senran Kagura?
Well, because I want to get straight to it. Is Steve Harvey your host of the year for 2013?
My host of the year was Jeff Keighley and Joel McHale in the VGX.
Oh, I missed that. That's I didn't terrible. Even want to watch it. Communities tonight, by the way.
I slowly drank over the course of that, and it wasn't that bad.
No, I'll bet it got good.
Yeah.
Did anyone
Near
scream?
The end, I'm just like, okay, there's some guys, they're talking about GTA music or something, whatever.
Whatever.
So, Zach, apart from boobs, tell us a little bit about what makes this game number three for you, and apart from the fact that you can watch Family Feud, apparently, while you play it.
It's got a little bit of strategy in it. It's goal-oriented, which I like. It's the kind of game where, you know, it's not super long, and you can always say, oh, I'm going to do just one more mission, you know, before I go to bed. And soon, you know, the whole night's passed you by. And you can, you know, I beat one of the games, the Good Samurai or the Good Girls game. Now I'm into the Bad Girls game. And
you love the bad girls, don't you?
Yeah. No, they're actually kind of jerks. But they have – but what's interesting – another thing that I like about Senran is that the story is actually kind of interesting for what there is. And
because isn't it kind of like visual novel-y?
It has visual novel parts. There are certain chapters that are visual novels. And, you know, in the good guy's story, you just get the good guy's story and the bad guys are just the bad guys. But in the bad guy's story – I mean, they have their own story and their own view on things and the way they do things. And, you know, it's interesting to get both perspectives.
Cool.
Yeah, I like it. It's you know, a download game. And like I say, you could play it all night and not really get bored and watch The Feud.
Marathon The Feud.
Yes.
So, Alex, what is your number three game of 2013?
So, I haven't talked a lot about this game to anyone. So maybe anyone who knows me, this might come as a surprise. But it's a sequel. It's a sequel that not a lot of people might think of when they think of the instant game of the year. But it was my first time playing this series. And my number three choice is Pikmin 3.
Grand Theft Auto Chatted Up.
Not yet. Not yet. Pikmin 3.
I was wondering if that would pop up.
I like this game. Well, since it's my first real foray into the Pikmin series, everything's new to me.
So did you didn't play any of the new play controls at all?
No, I've played a little bit of the first Pikmin. I didn't get into it, and then I dropped it. So I was a little wary getting into the 3.
Did you play the Nintendo Land Pikmin thing at all?
Well, I tried everything on Nintendo Land, and it was fun, but I didn't assume it was going to be a great indicator for the final game.
Yeah, I mean, the Nintendo Land Pikmin thing is kind of fun, but it doesn't really show, I guess, the depth of the actual experience.
So,
I was just curious about where you were coming from, coming into Pikmin.
Yeah, I'm pretty much completely fresh. So, the reason why I like this game is because I like that it's different. It itches that Nintendo itch that does something familiar, something that resembles something you've seen before, but is, on its own, completely unique. I like Pikmin 3 because it has a little bit of strategy, it has a little bit of an action game, and it has a little bit of a puzzle game. Like, it takes the most fun parts of each of those genres, and it kind of makes them into one game. And one other thing I like is, specifically in the way the story is told, the story is kind of bare bones, but it's so colorful, it's so Nintendo, it's so simple, and it's just a joy to watch the three characters and their story unfold, even though it's not that deep.
I really like the writing for, like, at the end of day things. Like, sometimes, of course, I'd want to just get to the next day and play it, but sometimes there would be, like, I think there's the one where there's a poem, and just kind of a lot of, like, goofy Nintendo-y stuff, as it were. Mm.
It's funny
in the writing. Yeah. I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not an award-winning story or anything, but it's just fun.
Right, and like Alex said, like, it kind of illustrates what can be done if Nintendo kind of takes their magic and applies it in new and different areas, where Nintendo games aren't, like, cute and enjoyable because they're strictly Mario or Zelda. It's like, it's born into Nintendo, and they can put these in other properties.
But yeah, it was fun. I love the experience from beginning to end. Because there was just so much joy to be found in the game, even though it was on the easy side. But the last thing I do want to comment on is how fucking good the game looks.
Oh, it's beautiful.
I have had a PS3, a PS4, I mean, since it came out. And Pikmin 3 is still the most beautiful game I've ever seen.
Did you go back and play any of the Christmas DLC or whatever it was?
I never touched, like, the secondary modes. I strictly stuck to the story.
That's what I was kind of hoping that they do story DLC, and I don't think there's hope lost for it. But I that's what I want more out of that game. Like, I dicked around in the secondary, like, the mission modes a little bit, but they never gripped me as much as the story did. And I just really loved... Like, I would just got kind of lost in that game. There were a couple nights where I'd just sit down and be like, I'm going to play, like, a half hour of Pikmin. And then it would be 3 a.m, and I'd be like, what happened?
That is a game I want to play, because I like the first two Pikmin a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it basically, Zach, it marries what's good about Pikmin 1 and Pikmin 2 into one game and makes it even better.
Nice.
And I think that's why that game works so well, is that it takes what's good about the previous games and just makes, like, this super game that still feels new.
It is very, very good. So we will go to me now. For my number three game of 2013, it's actually a game three of us, I should say, talked about on another segment, and that would be Rayman Legends.
I just got that on Vita. It's so good!
Right.
It's okay.
Right.
It's whatever.
And we're back. I just really enjoyed it. I mean, I wrote as much in my review. We've talked about it before.
Yeah, no, I mean, your review is wonderful. I just don't agree with it.
No, and that's fine. I mean, obviously, difference of opinion, and that's okay. But for me, and I've said as much before, but it struck that perfect balance between the polish of Nintendo's, like, Mario and Donkey Kong games and the, like, insane difficulty and creativity of some of the indie 2D platformers that have come out in the past couple of years, like Super Meat Boy and Cloudberry Kingdom.
I mean, Rayman Origins was a good-looking game to begin with, but then Rayman
this
Legends
is somehow better-looking, yeah.
It looks beautiful. It's not, like, I mean, I think that, you know, if you're talking, like, comparing it to Pikmin 3, it's not, like, the kind of thing where you're like, oh, it looks like a next-gen game, even though it is going to be on PS4 and Xbox One in February.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
but it does look really nice, and that art style just pops. It looks beautiful.
My only criticism so far, and I'm very early in the game, is I hate the Murphy levels. I hate them so much.
Need to go die in a fire.
How do they? Do you use the touchscreen like on on the Vita?
Yeah. And you rotate the Vita to do the rotating stuff. And
I feel like I would have liked it more if I played it on 360 or PS3, where they just had the button.
Yeah.
In multiplayer, the Murphy stuff is fun, but that's
I'll bet that's true, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I was just agreeing with Neil. I played the game mostly multiplayer, so for me, the Murphy levels weren't a problem because you're not handicapped by having this slow-ass computer, like, just slowly walks across the stage. I mean, it feels like you're still playing because you're playing with a competent human partner.
And I kind of understand how, like, you know, they wanted single players to be able to experience the Murphy stuff, but I feel like maybe, and I guess to an extent, you can kind of, like, beat the game from start to finish with ignoring all that. But it's still frustrating because, like, for example, if you, like, I was in a spot where I ended up getting to a point where I just skipped the Murphy levels, and in order to get that last world, I had to go back and beat all the fucking Murphy levels.
Oh. And it makes them a million times worse when you have to play back to back.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's also, for me, it's virtually impossible to get, like, all the lums on a Murphy level because the AI is stupid.
Yeah, because you need to guide them, more or less.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was, I think, I personally enjoyed the Murphy levels, but I think what I really enjoyed about the game is that it was a multi-platform game that felt like it belonged on Wii U. Like, it's probably the only game, really, I can describe that way, where it just feels right at home on Wii U. And I just imagine playing this with a controller, or even playing this on the Vita, would probably be the inferior experience. It wouldn't be as pure as playing it on the lead platform.
Yeah, you know why? Because all the Wii U versions of most third-party games are outsourced. Or, I guess, not done by the A-team. Like, I'm not 100% sure with, like, Assassin's Creed, but I think that's, like, there's a team that worked on porting it to Wii U.
I think Epic Mickey 2.
Same thing with Blacklist. Yeah,
represents Wii U third-party support.
Oh my god, that Wii U version came out within a year. I think it started in March and came out in November. That's when they added that SKU. But anyway, happiness.
So, anywho, Neil, what is your number three game for
2013? My number three game of 2013 is Luigi's Mansion Dark
Moon.
This was a tough battle. Fire Emblem is on the outside looking in this case. But Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon, I think why it gets the nod over that is that I love the single player. I've gone back and played some of the single player. I feel like it loses nothing in the mission-based structure. I think it just makes it more friendly on portables because you still get that exploration of everything around there because you're still going through the level. It's just you basically have these save points every now and then. And I really like the structure. I think the game looks beautiful. The levels are wonderfully designed. The music is fantastic. There's one or two boss battles that are a little frustrating, but on the whole, they're all really cool. I like the finale a whole lot. And the multiplayer, which is probably one of my favorite multiplayer experiences on 3DS. I've gotten a lot of mileage of that. You know, I mean, not necessarily PAX East, but no one had really played the game at that point. There is a learning curve for the multiplayer, but if you're playing with a couple people who, you know, had played the game in single player, it's a blast. And I had a lot of fun with that, like going to Street Pass events and stuff like that. That would usually be the multiplayer game that I would play.
There was like a month span where my wife and I, every night, we sat down and we played a bunch of multiplayer.
It's so damn good. And I doubted it because I remember, I think it was right before the review, I got to do them, like I think, you know, because you can do download play. So I played that with people locally and that was really fun. And I didn't think the online would be that fun, but the online was still pretty damn fun.
Yeah.
Because I played with Don for a few rounds and we also mixed it up with some randoms. But yeah, I mean, I love that game, and it's really, I think I made a joke about how, because I gave Next Level Games' last Nintendo game, Punch-Out, a 10 out of 10. And this game was damn close to getting the same. I gave it a 9.5 when I reviewed it, and I didn't think that was going to fucking happen at all. Because I think there might even be a podcast show from, like, January, where, Scott, you made a crack about it. I'm like, they'd have to do a lot, and they almost did it.
Sounds about right. It's a sweet game. I didn't expect to like it as much as I did, and I really did enjoy it. To me, it's like the production value is what sends it over the moon for me. just all the little touches. I mean, getting like just the ringtone, the ringtone for the DS,
the elevator music being the menu music from Mario.
Exactly. Yeah, and just all like Luigi's expressions. He's so animated throughout the entire game. I mean, it really he feels like a little cartoon character.
Mario.
yeah, it's very enjoyable. It's much better than I ever expected.
Is he searching for Mario in this game?
No, I don't think he's searching for Mario. No, I think in this he's just helping Professor
Egad.
Yeah. So, Zach, your number two game of 2013.
Number two was Link Between Worlds before all of you reminded me that Wind Waker came out a few months ago. So it's Wind Waker.
Wow.
So damn good.
I do love me some Wind Waker.
Mm-hmm.
The best part about this is that you reminded this because I was talking about how I'm not going to have Wind Waker in my top three.
And I freaked out. Somebody has to have Wind Waker up there. It was good 10 years ago. It's better now.
Yeah, it's a damn good game.
All of the, I mean, you know, they didn't really shorten the Triforce quest. I mean, they did in that you don't have to get a whole bunch of more maps decoded, but you're still getting the same maps. That was never really made clear in any of the early reviews. So, you know, it was kind of weird when I'd get a treasure map and be like, oh, cool, I'll go to this spot, and oh, it's a Triforce piece. Okay. Like, you can get Triforce pieces long before you go on the Triforce quest. So that was strange. But it was good, and the graphics are unbelievably good. Like, I don't know. It looked like a living cartoon in 2002 or 3, whatever. But it really does now. And I really hope that they, you know, take the series, make a sequel to, a real sequel to Wind Waker with these graphics. You know, because Phantom Hourglass was not a real sequel. I don't care what anyone says. And, but it's just so beautiful and such a unique design that doesn't really age, and I think they have a real gem on their hands with this aesthetic, and I'd hate to see it die, especially in this HD treatment. So I really like it. I really like the Swift Sail, even though getting it is kind of a chore. And you kind of have to know where to go. Like, you have to be – if you don't know where it is, you're not going to find it. That kind of sucks, but whatever.
I would like to see, since the Wii U has the horsepower, I would love to see a sequel that has much more, like, land real estate in it.
Oh, yeah.
So, instead of the one thing per square having more to it.
I agree.
Yeah. Like obviously the sea is as has been used in things like Skyward Sword and even, like, Mario Galaxy. You know, it's easier to have these small, self-contained environments, and you can do more with them with weaker hardware. But with the Wii U, it should be no problem having, like, a really awesome-looking Wind Waker sequel that has, yeah, much larger landscapes and more to do, like on foot, more to explore rather than like
or
just
even
traveling
just
across an empty ocean.
Take the concept like they tried to do in the Sky and Skyward Sword, but I don't know, actually put shit in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I just remember Ocarina of Time and like being in Hyrule Field and how amazing that was. I want that like times a million. So, but yeah, I would, at this point, I would totally take a Wind Waker sequel over like a super serious looking HD Zelda game. I would really be happy with a Wind Waker sequel.
And the gamepad item switching is so well done. Like,
just everything about that remake is well done.
Everything about it is great. I'd give it a 10. No question.
Yeah.
I did. Yeah.
I know you did.
Neil did.
I agree with you.
So, Alex, your number two game of 2013.
So, this was very surprising to me, because I honestly thought I was going to be the only one with this game on my list, but as it turns out, my number two Nintendo game of the year is also The Legend of Zelda, The Wind Waker HD.
Excellent!
Yeah, well, see, Alex, I feel like it's more legit for you because you've never played it before.
Well, it's not only more legit because it's a whole new game for me, but it's also new because I was hating on this game before it came out, because I knew it had a short development cycle. I knew they probably didn't add that much stuff to it. So it had my cynicism going against it when I actually bought the game for no reason.
Good game. It's so such a goddamn good game.
Here's what I love about this game from the perspective of an outsider looking in.
Sean Connery as the Prince of Red Dragons?
More than that, Zach. What I love about this game is that it takes what I love about Zelda and it twists it while still maintaining its identity. Link is the hero, but he's not quite the hero of time. He's more like this curious Japanese boy who just falls into a bunch of situations. Almost a little bit, I don't want to say diehard, but almost like a normal kid who who doesn't seem that prepared.
That's beautiful.
But ends up saving the world in the process. I like the world because it's sort of like Hyrule Field, but it's not quite getting point A to point B. The game is so expansive in its ocean that it's actually really fun to get lost.
Oh, yeah.
And I like this because in something like Ocarina of Time, where it might get a little frustrating when you have to find something and you have no idea what to do, I didn't mind getting lost and dealing with the obtuse Triforce quest because it was so fun to sail around and figure out what I had to do
exactly.
on my own.
Amen.
I think if you are taking the pussy route out and you are using GameFAQs to play this game, you are doing it wrong and you are having a bad time.
Amen.
What you need to do is enjoy this as the classic experience it surely was when it came out. Sit down, deal with the challenging puzzles and pretty easy combat on your own, and just pile through it regardless of how hopeless the situation may seem. Because it's tough, but it's just tough enough.
I believe combat's never been better in a Zelda game.
It's very good.
It is very good.
That's the truth!
I mean, it is the kind of thing, like, when I first went through it, like, I didn't have that patience. And as I've gotten older and more zen-like, I have the patience to play through that game. It's way more enjoyable that way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it is
what a fucking awesome game.
Heck of a game. It's kind of great to get a re-release of probably one of the more inventive Zelda games, and then an incredibly new inventive Zelda game in the same year, like a couple months apart. It's good stuff. Like, it reminds you, like, for as much as you might think Zelda has stagnated, getting those two games within the same year kind of inspires confidence in the future of the series, I think. So
I can completely agree.
So my number two game of 2013 is Super Mario 3D World.
Okay.
Now, what could number one be?
It was very, very, very close.
I know what his number one is.
Yeah.
I have two ideas.
3D World is just, it's just so fantastic. I mean, there's just no way around
it. Now, hold on, Scott. Yeah. I haven't played this game.
Sure.
Because everybody who plays single player only has said it's just going through the motions. It's much better as a multiplayer game with somebody who knows what they're doing, but none of my friends do.
Zach, it's still a really goddamn fun game.
Yeah.
Playing it by yourself.
Okay.
As I did for most of it.
When you play it by yourself, how it's going to go is probably the first world, maybe even most of the second world, you're going to enjoy it. You're going to think, like, okay, like, this isn't necessarily something I haven't seen before.
I believe it's the second or third level in the third world is when you're just like, oh, these guys aren't fucking around.
Yeah, and then it just keeps going from there. It's not like, I don't know how much you played of New Super Mario Bros. U, but I feel like that game got great.
I 100% of that game.
Yeah, it follows that kind of trajectory where it's still never, like, super, super challenging, but it's hard enough. It's the right balance.
It got hard enough when you're trying to collect all the coins in a level.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, it is that same kind of difficulty.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and see, even 3D World, or New Super Mario Bros. U, I think, got great, but much further in. Like, the really, really inventive stuff, to me, hit, like, in almost the last two worlds, and then the bonus world.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, with 3D World, it really hits much quicker, and there's a ton of bonus content after the game is over.
Playing through that game, I'd just be like, all right, I think I'm, oh, shit, there's another world?
Nice.
It just keeps on going. Eventually it ends. But
They're that perfect. They're not too small and they're not too big, so it's totally easy to just, like, think, like, one more level, and then all of a sudden it's, like, 3 a.m., and you've just been playing nonstop.
Nice.
It's so great.
I sincerely adored playing through that game. but I hate to be one of those assholes, but I am of the camp, like, I want a sequel to Mario 64. I don't want another 3D Land game. I want something new. And this game was kind of emblematic of, like, it's still an awesome game, but I want to see something new. And
can you imagine a modern graphics version of Mario 64 with better physics?
That's what I was hoping for at E3, and I didn't fucking get it.
Yeah, and that'll come eventually. I will say, I thought this game, same as you, like, when it was first announced and they showed all the previews and stuff, I didn't consider it, like, a real true 3D Mario game, but I really do now. It's not the sequel to Super Mario 64, no, but it is far and away better than the recent 2D Mario games.
Definitely.
It is so great.
I mean, the cat suit's fucking great. I really love what the double cherry power-up adds. Like, it's really, like, I'd be foolish to say that it's a bad game, because I don't believe that. It's just that I was left at the end of it being like, okay, this was really cool, but I want something more. And it wasn't that it was lacking content. It was that, like, I wanted something new. I didn't want 3D Land with a cat suit and a double cherry power-up that were pretty cool, but...
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and yeah, I don't really want 64-2 either. Like, these games are all excellent. Like, I've hated on 3D World a lot over the last few months, and I'm sure it's an amazing game, but it's not the game I want. The game I want isn't Mario 64. It's the next game that does what Mario 64 does.
Yes, yes, that's exactly what... That's what I mean... And I hate to get so much in that kind of, like, this is how I felt 6 months ago, but before E3, I was like, I don't know what this new 3D Mario is going to be like, but I just want to have, like, my fucking head, my head blown apart. And when I heard Super Mario 3D World, my heart just sank a little bit. And I played it at E3, and it was great. It was tons of fun. But I want something new.
Right.
And that's why it didn't make my top three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Spoiler.
That's fair, but I still loved it to bits.
Oh yeah,
and
yeah.
I mean, played through the entire thing.
I should probably Green Star. Stop talking whenever you mention your three, because I've shit on two of them.
It's okay. I don't mind. I'll talk some mad shit about your number two.
Okay, you probably can.
What is your number two, Neil?
My number two. Can you guess, Scott? I'll give you a guess.
I was gonna say, is it Runner Two?
Yes, it is. It is BitTrip Presents Runner Two.
So good,
of Rhythm Alien. And this game basically got cemented as being one of my fucking favorite games of the year, because I literally played through all of it on Vita.
I'm in the process of doing that right now.
I just, you know, I adored BitTrip Runner, and this is like that, but even better. It has a lot of content. It doesn't creep up to the, like, kind of balls hard challenge of BitTrip Runner. But that's not necessarily what I want either.
I think so. The later last level gets some balls hard challenge.
Oh yeah, definitely. I just really enjoy Runner 2, and it's the kind of game that I can just sit back and play over and over again
and zone out. Kind of like, you get in a zone. Kind of
like Mutant Muds.
You do.
And I love playing it. I love the music. I love the levels. I played this time with the Good Friends character DLC pack. So I'm playing as Dr. Fetus.
Nice
boy. Spelunky guy, quote from Cave Story, and that's a lot of fun too.
You gotta love any game that starts with retro graphics that might make anyone's eyes glaze over, but in the sequel, it totally sacrifices most of its retro qualities and just becomes a totally modern game that stands on its own merits.
I was totally skeptical about, you know, the new art style change when I first saw it, but. I mean, it works.
It works really well.
It looks amazing, yeah, when you're seeing it in motion.
And has anyone else come to the conclusion that the first world is actually Columbia from Bioshock Infinite?
I could see that.
Yeah.
I do love even the variation of the worlds, like, in the narration. It's just got, like, this really, like, yeah, the narration goofy is sense great. Of humor. The reverse merman, I fucking love. Like, that makes me laugh every time I see it. You have the dude with the hamburger for a head.
Wet
like
fart cheeseburger.
Cheeseburger or whatever. Like, it's just, I love it. I really love that game.
It is a fantastic game. I will give you that. I can't talk shit about it. So we'll see about your number one. Zach, your number two game of, or wait, no, you already
number
did
one.
Two. Didn't you? So you're number one. Oh,
number
geez.
One.
Number one.
It's, number one. It's, Runner Two. Future Legend of Rhythm Alien.
Fantastic. Tell me about this game, Zach.
Well, it's a game where you're running forward, and you can't stop. No, it's just, I mean, the reason it's my number one, and it just happened recently, is, I mean, we talked about it last week or the week before. It was my number one game of the last year for Wii U.
Oh, yeah, the Wii U, yeah.
But what really cemented as my game of the year was I got it on Vita because I had Vita Bucks from Christmas, and I was like, eh, I have a temporary, you know, membership to PlayStation Plus, and this is like $7. I'll get it. And then I just kept playing it. I couldn't stop. And
like, I didn't, like, I ended up going back. I was getting some triple perfects, man.
Yeah,
like,
I got some triple perfects. That was amazing. And I think, honestly, I think I like it more on Vita because it's portable. It's portable. And if you have headphones, good headphones in, it sounds phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like, it sounded good on the TV, but when it's right in your ears with the stereo sound, it's unbelievable. And that game's music is second to none this year.
I will say, with that game, like, to your point about it being kind of better on a portable, with that game, that's the only game where I chose to play it on the gamepad when I had the option to play on the TV.
Oh, really?
The only game I've ever done that.
I couldn't play it on the gamepad. I don't know why. It just bugged me, and I had to play it on the TV.
I remember, because I was reviewing it, I would kind of just check with the latency. I would go between back and forth in levels, and that would really fuck with me. But, I mean, I didn't notice a big difference. There is a little bit of latency between the gamepad and the TV, but it's not that bad.
Yeah, it's not like the quality of the video is a whole lot better on the Vita. I just don't know why I couldn't play it on the gamepad.
Yeah.
Who knows? It is just personal preference. It's maybe the only game besides Darksiders 2 that I can't stand playing on the gamepad.
Huh. It's just, those games are not similar at all.
No, I know. but yeah, Runner 2 is unbelievably good.
It's so fucking good.
And it's like randomly on sale on like many different stores. So if you haven't played it yet, you really should. Whether you find it on Steam or it's been on sale a few times on the eShop, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. And I almost bought the soundtrack, but I think I've said this before, without all the bells and whistles, sound effects, it's not the same at all.
Yeah.
Right, when you're hitting your jumps and your ducks and all that stuff, yeah.
Why it works. It's not the music by itself, it's the harmony.
Yeah, exactly. And every stage might have the same background music, but, you know, the rhythm of the stage is different, and every stage sounds different. It's so great. That's all I'll say about it. Go buy Runner 2, no matter how you got to do it. Except iOS, I can't imagine how that game would work on iOS.
So, Alex, your number one game, which hopefully isn't Runner 2.
It is not. Okay. My Nintendo game of the year is Animal Crossing New Leaf on 3DS.
Oh, of course.
Duh.
All right.
I witnessed this shit firsthand.
Yeah, okay. So, this story is 6 months long. I'll tell it in the short two-minute version, but the story started 6 months ago.
You know, Alex, we have time. If you want to hit me with the six-month version, go ahead.
Zach and I both don't have jobs, Alex. Take your time.
So this started at E3 when it was the first day I got there, and I really wanted a physical copy of Animal Crossing New Leaf. So to do that, meaning I had to sacrifice playing it on the plane at all.
Yeah, I played it on the plane. It was awesome.
I had to literally sprint to the Target a mile away to get one of the last physical copies of Animal Crossing. And that game was my game of E3 because it was the one that kept my cool. It was the one that gave me, okay, this shit's getting to be too much. I need to just relax in my town for a while. And I love this game because not only is it so relaxing, not only did it bring the addiction back, I mean, I dropped 100 hours into this game, and it's not even that impressive, but it does everything a good sequel does, because I'm going to be saying this for every single game in this category, but it does what Nintendo does best, because it allows the game to maintain its identity, like Wind Waker, like Pikmin 3, while adding even more to it. It makes the clothing options way expanded, and you can put way more clothes on the guy. It allows you to be the mayor, which, in my opinion, changes the game a lot. It makes the game feel like the first big sequel the series has had since Wild World in, like, 2004.
Alex, can you get all style savvy up in that?
And maybe not that much, but way more. It's way more impressive than the GameCube Animal Crossing, when all you could do is one shirt pattern that acts as both your shirt and your horn cap. Mm-hmm. And now you can have the accessories, you can have the hats, you can have the masks, you can have socks, shoes, pants, all that. It is awesome. Like
I remember discussing with you at E3 about how you're like, look at how pimp my mayor looks.
I dropped.
And I was like, mine has a Samus mask. Do I win?
I was an active contributor at E3, but by the time that week was over, I had already dropped like 15 hours into it.
It would be be like sitting waiting for an appointment, and you'd be like, I'm going to go fishing.
The game is pretty brilliant, in my opinion.
It really, I mean, it wasn't, it didn't, it did not make my top three, didn't even make my top five, but Animal Crossing New Leaf is the first game in the series that I actually put a lot of time into, because I would always get really into Animal Crossing for like 3 days, and then, you know, it happened with the Wii version and the GameCube version, where I played for a little bit and then just stop. And it's not that I didn't enjoy it, it's just that it didn't hold me. I wound up playing Animal Crossing New Leaf, I think, every day for a month and a half.
Holy crap.
And then I took like a 2 week break and then got really into it for another 2 weeks. And you know what? At some point in the future, I'm probably really going to get into it for another 2-3 weeks, maybe even longer. And that's the great thing about having it, you know, on your 3DS at all times, is that you can just go back to it whenever you want.
Well, what makes it fantastic too is you sort of have this refinement by Nintendo with the game where it's really fantastic and it is addictive, and I do think it's the best in the series easily. But it's also on hardware that easily allows for wireless communication, whether locally or online. And we have things like Twitter and YoGaf where it's so easy to communicate with people and find people towns to visit and stuff. It's
a
perfect
thing,
like
seeing this, Twitter around Animal Crossing.
Well. Exactly, it's this perfect like convalescence of all
it,
of this.
Was it
all
beautiful,
this
stuff Neil? Did it get really old really fast?
Turnips. Well, I got turnips. Turnip prices.
I mean, it was beautiful for like 2-3 weeks, and then I didn't pay attention as much.
Yeah, if you didn't play it, it maybe wasn't beautiful, but you loved having a friend on your Twitter, having a Twitter follower who had amazing turnip prices, and you could go cash that shit in. So,
although the turnip market wasn't as lucrative as it was in past games.
And just one last thing I want to bring up, something we're bringing up about pretty much every single game that has been on any of our lists, but what a damn good-looking game. Like, all of the character models look like puppets, basically.
It must look better in motion.
Like, felt on their body. It looks great. Like, even on the XL, it doesn't look that super jaggy like some games like Donkey Kong Country 3D look. Like, it actually takes the hardware and makes it look... I bet it even looks better on the XL than it does on the regular 3DS. Because
it just makes the game
look
definitely one of those games that might have been made with the XL in mind more, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But how about that Animal Crossing game on Wii U that will happen eventually? I mean, Animal Crossing Plaza, say what you will about the pointlessness of Animal Crossing Plaza, that shit looks hot.
I hope they don't City Folk it. Like, City Folk is a great game, but it was just a remake of Wild World, basically.
Oh, yeah. It just added a city and folk.
Ooh.
So let's move on to my number one game, which is Fire Emblem Awakening.
There you go.
I knew it.
Woo!
And also, I can't shit on this game. It's fucking awesome.
That's pretty great.
So good.
I will never play it, but you go ahead.
Why won't you ever play it?
Because it's a strategy RPG.
Zach, but it's like the best strategy RPG ever.
I know, but
it's really accessible.
Yeah,
I understand.
I mean, just turn off having your characters permanently die and then just enjoy all the cute girls that are in the game and you'll love it.
Dude, you get to marry them and make babies. It's awesome.
True. And your babies time travel so they can join your party.
Yeah, I mean, spoilers, that's the best part. Like, when I heard that, I was already on board with the game, but when I heard it's just like, yeah, and then people get married and then, like, their kids come and fight with you. I'm like, but that doesn't make any fucking sense. That's incredible.
Yep.
Is it still the same swords beats... stabs,
it's the same rock, paper, scissors kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
Huh. Absolutely. Yeah, it's just so much more refined, and it's just such an excellent game. I mean, I've been a fan of Fire Emblem for a long time. I played the GBA games, I played the GameCube game, the Wii game. But this is perfect. I mean, as
it's also kind of like a greatest hits too with all the DLC.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like, if you're a longtime Fire Emblem fan, there's a lot of fan service here. In the DLC, but even if not, the game is just so refined, and for a series that I think has scared a lot of people off because of its permadeath with characters and stuff and seeming so hardcore, this one is so welcoming and lets you customize that experience, you know, to your liking, whether it's through different difficulty options or turning off the permadeath, being able to save mid-battle if you choose to, like different things like that, so you can correct mistakes you make. Yeah, there's a lot of, like, nice touches to make the game exactly what you want it to be. So if you just want to enjoy the story and not focus so much on, like, hardcore grinding and like, mastering, you know, the rock, paper, scissors system, then that option is there. It has a pretty good story, a lot of production value, some great cutscenes and stuff that look actually pretty damn good in 3D.
Yeah. And it's a fun story, too.
Yeah.
Does it have Marth?
Sort of.
It has a character named Marth. Yeah.
Does it have Roy?
No. No one cares about Roy.
Maybe in the DLC.
Roy was cool.
No, Roy's totally in the DLC.
Okay.
So you can get Roy. Yeah.
But I mean, this is one of those games that usually I'll talk about after I beat a game about how, like, man, I just want to replay this right now. With Fire Emblem Awakening, I literally started over again. On the harder difficulty setting, and then, like, plowed through the first 5 missions and loved the shit out of it. But yeah. Then I got hung up on trying to get Donald in my party, and I realized, I'm like, no, I need to level up my team a little bit before I can get Donald on board.
Yeah. And what's great is sort of the outside stuff. I mean, Fire Emblem games in the past, to me, it was like, okay, skip past all the awful dialogue and just get from battle to battle. But there's a lot to do outside of battles in this game, like developing your relationships. To get married and have kids, and also to increase the sort of battle capabilities of your characters in battle. So if you have characters that are familiar with each other and are like have a better ranked relationship, then they can attack and protect each other on the battlefield, absorbing damage and doing extra damage to enemies and stuff. So there's sort of a reason to want to have these characters develop better relationships. And the relationship scenes are generally pretty funny. Like there's little like dialogue scenes between characters when the relationship levels up, and it's really well written and it's really humorous.
Can you name your characters?
You can name your avatar.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's the thing too. Yeah, you create your own character when you start.
Okay.
And have him have a strength and a weakness, and kind of put his, I don't know, choose his physical appearance and stuff
or
like
her.
That. So. Or her, yeah, or her.
All right.
As Zach would probably make a lady.
Yep, I would.
I would imagine. And then you could just marry any of these stud heartthrobs.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a Prince Karm is in your future. I don't know. But yeah, just a great game. Just as we talked about a few of these different games that are, the next sequel in a series. It's just a complete refinement.
Yeah.
And yeah, just fantastic. So.
All right. So my number one is The Legend of Zelda: A Link Between Worlds.
There it is.
3DS.
There we go.
Very
Someone
good.
Had to pick it.
Very, very
yeah,
good.
Well, I was very excited for this game. I loved the demo that I played at E3 and was really anxious to play it. And when I played it, it was better than I possibly could have expected. I'll definitely concede that, yeah, it's a little on the easier side because of the back half where you have all that, you know, you can explore wherever you want. It's not like one dungeon's really, really hard compared to the others. But that
I actually like that.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't bother me at all just because I loved exploring that world. I loved going to the different dungeons. I love the flow of the dungeons now that they removed items from being found in there, is that it is kind of like, you know, you go into the dungeon, you go in whatever order you want to.
You get the hook shot, you win. It's not that anymore.
Yeah. And I loved the level design as far as the dungeons go. I loved exploring the world. I loved the characters. I like the item mechanic a whole lot. I like upgrading my items. I actually like the graphics and the music. The music is fantastic. I just, from top to bottom, I really love this game.
My only problem with the game is, well, let's put it this way. My problems with the game stem from the fact that it got along in development as being A Link to the Past remake. And then somewhere along the line, they switched gears and said, well, let's make this a new game. There's so much Link to the Past left over, even the bosses in the Lorelei dungeons, that, I mean, it really kind of is a remake to Link to the Past in
That's
a lot of ways.
That's the one thing that I remember talking with people about it around E3 or around when it was announced, and everyone was worried that it was just going to be like A Link to the Past map. And in my mind, I was like, okay, so maybe, like, the main, the overworld, the light world, which we know is Hyrule, maybe that will be exactly the same, but then they'll have, like, the dark world, low rule, that'll be completely different. No, it's just the fucking dark world from, like, to the past. And, like, I don't really, it doesn't really kill my enjoyment of the game, but it is kind of a bummer that it's, like, all the dungeons are in the same fucking spot. You know, it feels like, it. I mean, it's a hell of a sequel slash remake, whatever you want to call it, but it feels more like a remake than I kind of hoped
right.
it would.
It's still very good. I really
enjoyed
it.
Link to the Past
it.
Is also a fucking fantastic game. Yeah. So that's kind of like, you know, I would kill for a game that just took the maps from Super Metroid and made a new game out of it.
Oh, yeah, right.
Oh, gosh.
And this is the same kind of thing. And it worked. It worked really well. And I love that the painting mechanic. I always feel like
it is good.
Sometimes it gets overlooked. Because everyone focuses on how similar to Link to the Past it is. And you realize that the painting mechanic kind of, you know, makes you look at everything in a different way. It gives this added verticality and gives you that depth to the environments. Makes you think in a different way. And that's why I like the puzzles in it.
I like those puzzle rooms that really utilize it well.
Yep. And the 3D looks beautiful, too.
Oh, yeah. It does.
I'm super excited for this game. I got it for Christmas and haven't played it yet because I'm trying to beat Persona 4 first. But it's the next game I'm going to immediately play, so...
Yeah, I mean, Persona 4, well, if I could start at Ease, Oathenfelghana instead of Persona 4. I'm
you
done.
Monster. Play
I'm
Persona,
done.
You jerk.
Ease is really good, though.
Yeah, that's probably fair. What were you going to say, Alex?
I think, so I remember, Scott, I think it was us who talked about Pokemon, and we were talking about the future of Nintendo taking advantage of the 3D on their platform. And we were, I think you might have made the point, or maybe we both did, that it seemed like Nintendo was shying away from 3D, especially with Pokemon, and maybe they're just going to make it optional. Maybe that's still true because of how soon this game came out after that discussion, but I think for the first time since Super Mario 3D Land, this game is better because of 3D.
Yeah. And much better. Luigi's Mansion was pretty awesome because of the 3D, too.
Yeah,
maybe not to the same degree, but it was a game that was made better.
All three of those games take great advantage of the depth of the 3DS, and I just hope more games do that in the future.
Yeah, I'll have to say, I never usually turn 3D on when I play games, but with the way you guys are talking, yeah, I may be able to flip it on and see what I think.
I played Link Between Worlds mostly on the 2DS, and I didn't really care about the difference. But on my XL, it does look great.
Oh, okay. Give it a shot. So that's it for Nintendo games, and now it's time to move on to our top game on another platform.
Our top Nintendo games.
Mr. Zach Miller, your top Nintendo game of 2013.
Okay, I'm gonna let you guys guess. It's a Vita game, but also a PS3 game.
Dragon's Crown.
Yep.
Oh, of course it is.
Neil got it.
Naturally.
Not just because of Sorceress, although that's a big part of it. Two big parts of it. It's also because that is an unbelievably fun online multiplayer game. Holy crap.
Have you been playing it with, like, people from the forums and stuff?
I've been playing it with people from Twitter. But yes, the forums.
Same
ultimately.
Difference, kind of.
Really fun. Like, get a good connection. The Vita's a little iffier with connection issues than the PS3, but, like, the whole time I was in Maui, I played that game online with some friends, and we, like, burned through it, and it was super fun. And I got a potion that let me redo all my skill points for Sorceress, and now she is a total badass. There are no wasted skill points. It's just so good.
I'm not picturing you being in Hawaii and just sitting in a room playing this online.
Yes. No, it was on the lanai overlooking the ocean. So fuck all you, right. man.
Slightly better.
Yeah. But yeah, it's just a really fun game on PS3 or Vita, and if you have it on both, you can transfer your save, and there's more depth. I mean, it's a loot-based game, but there's an unusual amount of depth to how that loot is given out. And, you know, you can go on multiple dungeon runs in a row, and you have multiple equipment loadouts that you can switch between dungeons, and there's a lot of strategy involved for every character. So it's really, it's a meaty game, and it's producing some really wonderful figures that I'm going to have to buy.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So, Alex, I think we all know what yours is, but why don't you go ahead and announce it?
It's before we do that, I have a few runners up that I'm just going to list quickly and maybe say a sentence about why I think it's awesome.
Runner 2 on Vita.
Well, we had our Runner 2 recommendations, but just speed runners up. Metal Gear Rising Revengeance. It has a fantastic combat system and one of the finest final boss sequences I have ever seen in a game.
Saints Row 4
takes the fun of Saints Row 3, adds a touch of Crackdown, and makes it really fun. There's a couple Nintendo games in here. I think this is the only one. But Shin Megami Tensei 4 makes a really accessible JRPG, but adds the darkness and a touch of the difficulty that makes hardcore JRPGs so good. So, and then next one's The Last of Us. See every other site's Game of the Year list.
Boo!
What about that? Tearaway, it is basically, in a sentence, the Vita's answer to Kid Icarus Uprising.
Except it's good. Oh yeah!
You know what? This is a positive podcast.
I'm hosting the call. I can figure it out.
And then my number 3 game behind Animal Crossing and the game I'm about to talk about, Earth Defense Force 2017 Portable on the Vita. It is such a pure fucking video game experience. Basically, you get weapons, you kill monsters, you use the weapons that you gained off of the monsters you killed to get stronger weapons and kill stronger monsters. It's just so pure, so fun, and has a brilliant co-op. My game of the year, the best game, undoubtedly, I have played this year, and perhaps any other year, is a small independent game made by the startup studio. You might have heard of them, Rockstar North. The best game I have played this year, without a doubt, Grand Theft Auto V.
Really?
And I am going to tell you exactly why, in a potentially slightly boring explanation that'll hopefully only take a couple minutes, why I think this game is so amazing. First off, GTA V takes what 4 did, and not only makes it better, but it brings it to modern standards. Mechanically, the cover system, the shooting, the melee, the driving, and the mission structure feels tighter and more polished while still maintaining the personality and identity I love from GTA 4. So if you hate the driving, it still feels like the driving, but it feels better too, so hopefully you can enjoy it. As for the city, it takes the realistic cityscape that was a bit dreary in GTA 4, and it expands it to include a countryside, towns, underwater in the oceans, and it makes the world feel more organic, and this is partially through new vehicle types like planes and submarines, and also pedestrians that are even more crazy realistic than they were in GTA 4. Like, once I was playing as Michael, I went into a hair salon, and people were actually holding up the hair salon as I was entering it.
Nice.
It takes these crazy random events that were in Red Dead Redemption and makes them even crazier, and it just spreads them organically across the world. Like, everything feels like it runs on real time. Like, let's say I shave my head as Michael. Over time, his hair will slowly but surely grow back.
Nice.
But more importantly, to talk about the single player a bit more, the three-player mechanic introduced through Trevor, Franklin, and Michael creates a game that comes across as always fresh, always changing, and the three characters are like nothing else in the series. Franklin's the hoodlum-type character, who seems a bit like CJ-esque from San Andreas at the start, but he's a lot smarter. He is a very intelligent gangbanger, and he wants more. He wants better money. Trevor, who is, without a doubt, my favorite character of the year, is a crazy, meth-dealing, unapologetic, psychopathic monster who has a skewed but extremely consistent moral compass. And quick spoiler alert, he has another extremely crazy moment where he actually manages to, again, spoiler alert, murders the protagonist of a previous GTA game.
Nice!
And he's so fucking funny. And then Michael, this might sound a little weird, but he is the first middle-aged white male GTA protagonist who, and he feels exactly like a middle-aged white male with a family. Now, this might sound like, oh, it's just three different perspectives, whatever. But what this does for the mission types is that you might have one mission in Hick County with Trevor, where he is shooting up a biker gang, and he is dealing meth and flying biplanes throughout the country. And then you might switch to Franklin, who might have a more San Andreas-type mission in the hood. And then you switch to Michael, who's dealing with, like, the one percenters in the Beverly Hills equivalent. And I think the mission types are...
Does he break into Paris Hilton's house and steal her shit?
There are moments in that game that are almost exactly like that.
Nice.
And there are Paris Hilton equivalents. Like, one of the things about Rockstar, even if you don't like their writing, I think their writing is personally unfucking matched, they account for everything. What they do with their games is they put so much detail that even though it was made with $265 million or something crazy like that, it feels like it was made with a core vision, and it feels like it was made with the heart, the sweat, the blood, the elbow grease of actual people who wanted to make a real piece of art. And without a doubt, not only is it the best game I have played this year, it is probably maybe one of the best games I played this generation.
Hmm.
Hell of a game.
But I'm going to be very reductive here. Do you still get points for killing hookers?
Like, I guess you get, like, $80. That's worth nothing in the grand scheme of things.
Man,
end of the heist, you are earning, like, $1 million or more.
So hookers aren't even worth your time anymore.
No. Like, you try it once as a novelty, and then you're like, ah, this is stupid now. And then you shoot rocket launchers at pedestrians.
That's how you get your kicks.
Yeah.
Pretty good. If they ever release this on PS4, I will probably try it.
And I will buy it again.
And, yeah, I don't know. I've never got hooked on the series the way other people have. But I'm excited to try 5 if I ever get the chance.
Also, if you want to hear me talk about this for 50 more minutes, Danny Bivens and I talked about this game at length on Connectivity like a month or two ago. Sorry to interrupt, Neil.
I remember that.
So check that out if you haven't, yeah. So for me, my Nintendo game of the year, I'm torn between two PC games, but I think where I'm going to go, first of all, I should say that my PS3 broke the Wii U came out. And I have an Xbox 360, but I don't play it because I don't like to pay for Xbox Live, even though now I pay for PS Plus, but I think it's a better value anyway. But yeah, but either way, so I haven't had much access to Nintendo games unless they came out on PC as well as, you know, PS3 or 360. So I played things like Bioshock Infinite, but Bioshock Infinite is really terrible.
Awful. I was going to say, one of my favorite Nintendo things was the first hour of Bioshock Infinite.
Exactly. Yeah. God, that game is so disappointing.
Barrel at Sea was okay though.
Yeah, I hear that's actually better. Yeah, but I haven't checked that out myself. So my game of the year is actually a game that Alex and I have talked about a little bit on Twitter in direct messages, if I'm not mistaken. But Gone Home.
Oh yeah, of course.
Played that so bad.
It's so good. You really should. What's hard is there's not really much I can say about it here without like spoiling it.
Yeah, I know. Isn't every 5 minutes a spoiler? You can't even describe why you're home or what you're doing.
Exactly. Like, without taking away from it. So, there's not much I can say except that it's just the atmosphere it builds is fantastic. I mean, it's what, maybe a 2 to 3 hour long game. That's it. But that entire time when you're in this house, like, it just feels like such a real place. And it builds this great sense of, like, dread and emotion as you're exploring this house and discovering kind of what's going on and putting the pieces together. And it's just so fantastic in doing that. It's in such a short amount of time, it builds this fantastic place in a real world, unlike kind of anything I've had in another video game.
It's like the opposite of Bioshock Infinite.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Bioshock Infinite built a really cool world and then, like, only let you interact with it by shooting people in the face, so... It kind of wasn't very fun. In this, you can put cassette tapes in cassette players and listen to them.
Oh, really? Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, you'll find music taped to cassette tapes.
I do love hearing the one thing about how there's a bunch of episodes of the the X-Files on VHS tapes.
Well, yeah, that's something that can talk about.
And apparently that they checked to see if all of those episodes would fit on a VHS tape whenever they, like, put, like,
oh, yeah, like, they, like, did the math or something?
Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah, I mean, that's something that can kind of be talked about without spoiling it. The game is set in the, like, the mid-90s. So, yeah, you've got, like, the den with, like, the dad's VHS collection with a bunch of shit taped off the TV. So, yeah, it's, like, black tapes with white labels on them of, yeah, like, X-Files and, like, movies taped from TV. Your character that you're playing, her little sister in her room, has Street Fighter 2 combos written down, like, on a note card, like, on her desk, because she's a big Street Fighter 2 fan. So she's got, like, all Chun-Li's moves written down on a note card. There's just, like, a lot of, like, little stuff, like, nods to that era. Yeah, and it's just really good. The dad character, he tests, like, electronics, so he's in the midst of, like, the middle of testing out a laser disc player and, like, writing a review for it in a magazine. So there's just, like, a lot of little stuff like that that kind of builds that time and place. And if you're old enough to remember the 90s, which you'd be the youngest. I mean, you remember, but not...
I remember the late 90s. Like, exactly. The TV shows I was seeing was reruns from earlier in the 90s.
Exactly, there you go.
I'll be there for you.
So, like, the main characters are these two teenagers during this time. So if you were a teenager, or at least close to it, during the mid to late 90s, like, I think it hits home a little bit more. But yeah, it's just a fantastic game. And Zach, if you are interested in playing it, you absolutely should track it down.
Is there any chance it'll be on PSN or something?
I don't think so.
Shoot.
I know
my PC won't run that game.
Really? It's not that, I don't know, it's not that demanding of a game. I mean, you just walk around a house.
Yeah, that's true, just static stuff. I'll try it. I'll try to get it. I'll see if my computer will run it. I really want to play it.
So Scott and I had disagreements, I'll admit, on the story. He was pretty pro on the story. I had my criticisms, as I often do about video games.
Oh, really? I didn't know.
But I think it's good that the story was interesting and different enough that there was something to even agree and disagree about. It wasn't apathy. My reaction was not apathy to the story, which is the worst thing you can say about a video game.
Right, like, what the story was there.
What I can praise this game beyond high heavens for is how it builds the house that you explore in.
Yeah.
The house feels like a real house. It feels like maybe a more interesting version, and maybe it's definitely built around the plot, but everything has so much detail in it. Like, if you might open a drawer and you might see a pencil, that pencil will have no relevance to the plot, but it will be fully detailed with its own fake brand, and it'll look like a real pencil, even on low PC settings. The writing in the game isn't some fake typed into Microsoft Word handwriting. It's actual handwriting on the notes that was probably scanned into a computer and then put into the game. The house feels alive. It feels almost like the real main character of the game. And it is something I've wanted to see in games for a long time. And even if I might have ended up a little on the lower end, realm-wise, for how I felt about this game, I am still extremely, extremely impressed by how they built their small world.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fantastic. So, Zach, definitely check it out. Neil, how about you?
My Nintendo game of the year is Tearaway.
Okay, before you say anything else, Neil.
Yeah?
Didn't you feel like that game takes you out of the experience every 5 minutes?
No.
No? Because I got that feeling so much.
Dude's definitely a little talky.
No, not even the people. Just like, take a picture of this, take a picture of that, do this thing with your thumb.
I make stuff. Like, make a crown. I made snow that was the Green Bay Packer logo. You don't know what kind of joy I got out of that. And it was kind of that thing where it's like, when they asked for a crown and I made a crown. And then I was like, okay, that was okay. And then I realized the next thing, I'm like, I don't actually need to make what they're telling me to make. I can just make whatever the fuck I want, and it'll just be used for that purpose. And that's when I started having more fun with that game, and I think that's kind of the point, is just to have fun with it. And it was just something that hit me in the right spot when I was playing it. I didn't think any of the touch stuff was annoying. I liked the whole thing with me being the sun in the background every now and then. That was
cool, yeah.
And I just, I mean, it's so fucking charming. I can't handle it. And it was just a really, it was just a fun game to play through. The world's really nice. It's kind of like everything I wished Little Big Planet could have been, because Little Big Planet never clicked with me, but this clicked with me in a big bad way.
And you could definitely tell it's from the same people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I did like it. I played that in Maui too. I actually really like the platforming. The overall game is great. I just really did feel like there was way too much Vita stuff. Like, you know,
I mean, it just honestly didn't bother me at all. I really liked it. I think I've gotten to the point where I don't hate the back touch on the Vita anymore.
No, it's good for that game. That's true.
Yeah. And it's really clear. Like, they just do a really lot of good context clues. Because there will be times where I'll be like, what the fuck do I do? I'm like, oh, it's the little thing that's on the background of the Vita.
Yeah.
So that means I need to poke through it. Like, I love that stuff like that. The combat was a little lame. I'll give it that.
It never bothered me that much, personally.
Like, yeah, I mean, it didn't really detract, but...
It felt kind of unnecessary.
People talk about what's good about the game. The combat is way low on the list.
Yeah.
I think it was interesting... when Zach said that, like, the game's taking you out every 5 minutes. And I'm not going to call you wrong, because that is a totally valid opinion. I think the people
but you're
who...
Wrong.
The, okay. No, because the people who really love this game, I think they have to be into this type of game where you get as much out of it as you put in.
I'm definitely.
Sure.
And because of that, because I used every creative opportunity they gave me, to take a picture of my GTA 5 poster when I needed to make the skin of an elk.
Really? Get out.
And I spent minutes on that crafting table with the construction paper my perfect snowflake.
It's so simple, but it's so much fun.
I needed a stylus. My finger was just too fat and got in the way.
I felt like... I didn't feel like I was being taken out of the game. I honestly felt like me, Alex, was a... I was an actual character participating
in the
game.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the whole fucking point of the game, and I think they did it perfectly.
Yeah.
So I got two other quick runners-up. Hotline Miami is dope as shit.
Oh, yeah.
That game's just, it's insane. It's just, like, rock-solid game mechanics with the most ridiculous and fucked-up backdrop ever. and really, really awesome music. And animal masks that you wear that give you power-ups.
That's right.
And then my last one's Divekick, because Divekick's the shit, and everyone should fucking play Divekick. Get some buddies over, drink
so
some beers,
weird.
Or drink whatever Zach can drink, and just play some fucking goddamn Divekick. Dude. It's so great. I have so much fun with that game, and because of how simple it is to get into, you can get virtually anyone to play it, but there's so much more behind it than just like, oh, it's just one button's dive, one button's kick. Like, every character is different. There's fucking power-ups. Like, there's one character, like, he can't actually hurt you by kicking you. He just leaves a fucking lightning bolt behind him.
Everybody jumps and kicks differently.
There is a bat in a straitjacket that's fucking crazy. I love that game. It's so good.
I like it just because it's so ridiculous.
Yeah, and you can play two people on one Vita, so that's pretty cool.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, there can't be too many button inputs.
Yeah, you only need four.
Yeah.
But I will forever remember with that game at E3 last year. It was in the Sony booth, but it was, like, literally right across from the Nintendo booth. And I didn't notice it until, like, I think it might have been the last day. And I found it, and then I just put out, like, we were on a group messaging thing, and I put out a message being, like, met Divekick over by the Sony booth near Nintendo. Who wants to fuck? It's a couple people coming over, like, I don't know what Divekick is. I'm like, well, you're about to find out.
Motherfucker!
It's so good. It is a joke that I'm not fully aware of because I'm not a member of the fighting game community, but it is a joke that I wholeheartedly approve because it's actually a good ass game.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm done.
There you go.
All right. So that will do it. So, thank you everyone for being here. You out there, the listener, be sure to comment and tell us your top three games and your top non-Nintendo game as well. We definitely want to hear that.
Play along at home.
Yeah. So that will do it.
Some
thanks,
Dragon's
guys.
Crown, yo.
There you go. Or some Dive Kick with Neil. All right. That's going to do it. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. And that will do it for this week's episode of Connectivity. As always, you can send your listener mail to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. Be sure to rate and review us on iTunes if you haven't done so far. And you should follow all of us on Twitter. Go to nintendoworldreport.com and look for the Twitter sidebar on the right-hand side of the page, and you'll find all of our usernames there. And now, if you're interested, please stick around for a bonus segment all about the Doctor Who Christmas special. We'll see you next week.
You are the Doctor.
Yep. And I always will be. But times change, and so must I. Amelia.
Who's Amelia?
The first face this face saw. Think about it. We are all different people all through our lives. And that's okay. That's good. You've got to keep moving so long as you remember all the people that you used to be. I will not forget one line of this. Not one day. I swear. I will always remember when the Doctor was me.
Hello everyone, it's that time again for another Doctor Who bonus segment on Connectivity. I'm Scott Thompson, and as has lately, and probably for a while now will be the case, it is Nicholas Bray and Amanda Albert joining me. Hello.
Hi Scott. I see that you're using your holographic clothes.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yes.
Just for you.
Thank you.
No one else can
see
them.
We're not in a church though, so that doesn't make any sense.
The Church of Connectivity.
There you go. Man, you might have just given me the title for this week's episode. We'll see if anything better comes up, but Church of Connectivity sounds pretty damn good. We're here to discuss the Time of the Doctor, the Christmas special that just aired on Christmas Day last week, and what also happened to be Matt Smith's final episode of Doctor Who till the 100th anniversary. Because I think by then he'll only be, it's 50 years from now, so he'll be, what, like 62 then? He's pretty young.
However old I am, that's how old he'll be.
Yeah. we're going to talk all about the episode, sort of the response it's gotten, because it's been a little all over the place, and I guess look a little bit to the future, since this will be the last one of these we do for about 8 months, I think. Well, unless, I guess, a bunch of rumors come out and we decide to talk old Doctor Who, but...
We're gonna make you watch some Classic Who.
Yeah, make me.
Did you ever watch The Enemy of the World? That was your last assignment.
No, I get an F on
How this. How dare you.
But I'll watch it before the next
I watched
assignment.
It again!
Did you?
I have no kids, though.
Yeah, all you've got is time. Like the Doctor. I guess let's jump right into it. I just overall, how do you guys feel about the episode in terms of just being an episode and also in terms of being a Christmas episode? Because those are a little special for Doctor Who.
Underwhelmed.
I liked it, actually.
That's kind of where I thought, that's where I thought you guys would be. I enjoyed it too. Amanda, what had you underwhelmed?
I loved the last 10 minutes of it. It's just everything up until that, felt frustrating.
Oh, frustrating why? Just because there was so much going on, or?
I just, the simplest way I can put it is that it's my least favorite of all the Christmas specials. And
really?
Just yeah, and
even,
just most...
even less than that other one, the Narnia one.
That's probably my favorite.
Really?
What?
Wow, what?
Yeah, see, I'm the complete opposite. That Narnia one's for sure my least favorite with the talking trees.
Okay, anyway, what was your point, sorry?
All the things that I dislike about Moffat's style of writing, it was like all of them in one episode. And so that was irritating to me. And one of my favorite villains was effectively neutered. So, and it wasn't like, I just felt like, yeah, there might have been reasons to back up why things happened, but I didn't think they were very clever or interesting reasons.
Okay. What favorite villain of yours was neutered? The Silence?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was,
well, that was one thing
silenced.
I was curious about. Yeah. There you go. That was one thing I was curious about. So the Silence in their entirety are members of this church, or just that, just a small group? I wasn't.
Well, the Kovarian branch apparently was some, random sect that breaks away from the normal church, and that's why they behaved the way that they did. But really, the rest of the church is there, I guess, to look out for the Doctor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, Nicholas, what did you like about the episode?
I don't know. I liked the enormous amount of time that it spans, how he's really, really old in the end, and, like, he lived there for, like, what, maybe 1,000 years or so? Like, it's pretty,
like,
close.
Well, 300, and then I guess more
then
when he
sends
her away a second time.
Yeah, it's like an undisclosed amount, because he still thinks it's the same kid, but it's obviously he's descended.
Right, he's like, no, I'm not him.
Yeah.
Can I ask you guys a question about it?
Yeah.
He's, like, throughout the tenure of Matt Smith, aged by hundreds of years. Do they explain at any point why now it physically starts to show?
He stopped moisturizing.
That's what really irritated me.
That harsh cold wind on his face every day.
And I like him a lot playing an older version, because to me, Matt Smith is always kind of young and old at once, so it was cool to see him be almost like this Doc Brown-like personality, but I just didn't see at any point, I couldn't tell if I missed it or not, if there was a reason that he was physically aging.
Well, how much has he aged since he's been on the show? Because there's been
a few
a
centuries.
Lot of talk. Yeah, well, that long, you think? Centuries?
Well, Matt Smith went away at the start of season 7, right? And, like, aged a few hundred years and then made up with him. Is that what I'm remembering?
Well, Tennant, when he regenerated from Tennant, he was, like, 900 and something. And then at some point in Series 7, I remember him commenting that he was, like, 1,200 or 1,300 years old. So,
I think 1,200 sounds right. Yeah. So about 300 years there. And then who knows how long, like, between the season 7 and 8, I guess. Cause he has a lot of kind of loner time then.
In the 50th.
Yeah, exactly. But you're right. I mean, it does seem kind of, I don't know, like he didn't age at all, like at all during that time. And then suddenly 300 years later, he's really showing it.
And I'm not saying it's a bad idea. I just don't, it doesn't explain why. Mm-hmm. But I enjoyed seeing him play it that as an older man.
I actually thought the last time we see him, when he's really, really old, I felt that his performance wasn't quite convincing enough. Like every now and then he would say a line that just didn't seem right. He still felt younger, if you get what I mean.
Yeah, but I guess maybe you could say that was just kind of his personality, because I still think they did enough to illustrate his age, like him thinking that that kid was the same kid from hundreds and hundreds of years ago, because he did seem kind of a little delusional.
He turned into Hartnell by the end.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
That's the vibe I got. Which I guess, you guys would know more from the older realms, but is this like the first time we've really seen a Doctor age like this and get that much older?
Well, the first Doctor, didn't he technically regenerate because of old age? Like, he said it was wearing a bit thin?
Yeah, it's speculated he was already a few hundred years old or something.
Mm-hmm.
So.
So I guess at some point they do hit a point where they really start to age, which I guess is how you could explain, Hartnell being as old as he was when you first meet him. But we've just never really seen it with any of the other Doctors. So, but I didn't really mind it. I mean, I can see how you can punch some holes in it, but it didn't bother me at all. No. I thought it was fine.
And what about the best new companion in the series, Handles?
Wilson?
Wilson.
Yeah, basically, yeah, his Wilson.
I felt that he was basically like a reference to K-9 at times. He's just like affirmative.
Yeah, yeah. Totally.
I liked him. I liked that a lot.
And he is now the longest serving companion.
I guess that's true, yeah. Like some time over 300 years. Yeah. So yeah, that's pretty good.
God, it's freaking Wilson.
Yeah, Handles was good. There's a lot of good humor in the episode throughout. And we got a lot of like sort of explanation and stuff people had already speculated about before, like the number of regenerations that had been used. I know there's been a lot of like writing before this episode about how they're going to explain things, considering he had basically used his 12 regenerations already. When you include David Tennant with his cut off hand and everything like that.
Oh, I put him in the notes here because I took notes when I rewatched it. He says not just one new regeneration. He says it's a whole new regeneration cycle. Do you guys think that means 12 more lives?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
It's a whole new cycle. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
awesome.
Yeah.
It's not just one more. Yeah. Which I kind of wonder about that. At the very end, you know, when we see Peter Capaldi for roughly 30 seconds, you know, he has that line about not knowing how to fly the TARDIS. And I've kind of wondered if maybe that's something they might build in the show, that because it's a whole new cycle, will he not have his memories of what he's done in the past regenerations? Mm. Like, is it basically like a really whole new start for him?
Will it be like the Eighth Doctor where he constantly forgets everything?
Exactly, where he's got like amnesia, or like, is that just a funny throwaway line? Because I could really see it going either way.
I have a feeling it could go either way. I took it as he might just have erased everything, and it would be ironic because the last thing Matt Smith says is, "I will always remember this," you know, and then he's immediately forgot all of it. And
right,
I could see them giving him like a reboot, but it would basically be a blank slate for the next 50 years or whatever. But I don't know if he'll actually do it because a lot of people would complain about it probably.
Oh, I think it would be interesting though that now the companion has to fill him in on who he is.
Right. Yeah, it would be more interesting for Capaldi to be very fresh, feel young, because if the Doctor keeps going, he's just going to keep getting more and more like crazy with his memory, and he would just start deteriorating, you know, just from having so much stuff in his head.
Well, and plus he'd know, like, there's never a situation that arises, at least for the most part, where he doesn't understand or know what's going on, or like he doesn't meet something he doesn't already know about, you know, some alien race or some event. So it would be interesting to see him not know everything right from the start and figuring things out and learning, as if he's this brand new, man.
See, the thing, you know situation. How he erased himself from the Daleks database at start of season, or Asylum of the Daleks or whatever? I thought that's where they were maybe going with it, but then they made the Daleks remember everything about him in this episode, so...
Which was kind of disappointing.
Yeah, I was bummed out by that, too.
Mm. If they'd both had the reset, it would have been, like, blank slate.
Yeah, what if they, if they both had the reset, like, what if there were situations where they found themselves, like, working together because they didn't know they were these, like, sworn ancient enemies, like, stuff like that would have been interesting. Mm.
Or it could be all the more bittersweet when they just reenact the same thing.
Exactly, yeah. But yeah, no, they completely, just canceled out everything that happened in Asylum of the Daleks, which, is kind of too bad. I mean, I don't mind if they erase it after they do something with it, but they kind of just had that one episode, and then I was like, okay, there'll be another Dalek episode at some point that involves this, and it never happened.
It seems pointless. Like, they didn't use that at all. They just...
Yeah. That's probably one of the few things that kind of irked me about the episode, because I overall enjoyed it as an episode. Maybe not so much as a Christmas special. There really wasn't much of a Christmas tie-in, apart from the town was, for whatever reason, called Christmas, and it snowed there every day. but yeah, it didn't kind of have that Christmas feel that most of them have.
Well, usually it seems like the tradition the last few years has been you take a common Christmas story and you incorporate it in some way. That way the casual viewer doesn't necessarily have to be familiar with the rest of the show's canon. But this, I don't know what the fuck the casual watcher thinks away.
No casual person could turn this on and watch
it. I mean,
I watched it
with Mike's parents, and they were perpetually confused.
Oh, for sure.
And even, like, when I was watching it the first time, it was going at such a frenetic pace at the start. I was missing details here and there. I was like, oh, I'm going to have to watch this again. Unlike Dave the Doctor, where it seemed very straightforward to me. This one was like, oh, okay, I'm missing bits and pieces here. I'm going to have to see it again because they had an hour to cram all this stuff in.
Yeah. You know, that's a good point. For as much as, like, the Day of the Doctor should have been complete, total fan service, and it was, and this episode should have maybe been a little bit more mainstream. They were kind of flip-flopped in their presentation, where 50 the Day of the Doctor was not necessarily like it didn't have a lot going on, but it was presented in much, like, slower, careful fashion. Whereas, like you're saying, yeah, the first 5 minutes of this episode, if you're not paying attention, you can miss a lot of details and a lot of stuff. And it happens very quickly. And then it slows down, and you've got a lot of time with the Doctor on the planet, seemingly just stopping various bad guys as they try to infiltrate the planet.
What'd you think of the Krak returning?
I liked that, actually.
Yeah,
I didn't even think I didn't even think about them bringing that back to Resolve, but I really enjoyed that, and that it tied into the Day of the Doctor, that Gallifrey is out there somewhere, and it's trying to reach out to the Doctor to come back is really interesting, and that's cool because, like we talked about last time, that opens up the possibility for them to sometime explore a storyline where Gallifrey does return and the Time Lords return.
Yeah, and I always liked that bit of the storyline from Series 5 with the Krak, so it was cool. It made it, at least that aspect of it, made it feel more like it was one cohesive thing from
exactly.
All the series.
Right, it tied it all together. I wasn't expecting that at all. So you got that, and then more of the TARDIS exploding and everything like that. We got explanation for how and why it exploded.
And then that's what he saw when he opened his door in room 11.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, like, that stuff was cool. So I enjoyed all that. Like I said, I enjoyed it as an episode. I thought it did a good job of wrapping a lot of things up. We saw a lot of callbacks. You know, Amy Pond came back at the very end. It was a sweet little moment.
Amy. Yeah. And it was just so funny. He just starts dazing off. Amelia and Clive's like, who? What? You're just forgetting about me. Talk to me. He's look at the look on her face. It's like, oh, he's thinking about some other girl.
And you know what it hit me was that saying that she said that they're all ghosts to him. Like he really is constantly being haunted by the memories of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Of everyone. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's always got Adric at the corner of his eye.
Now I'll never know if I was right.
I thought to that point about like Amy Pond and even the main librarian lady who or church lady whose name I can't remember.
Tasha Lim, she was cool.
Which is an anagram for lame hats. Coincidence?
Well, there you go. Amanda has solved it.
Actually, she at times she I've read this somewhere else, but I sort of agree with it now. Watching it again, it does feel like she might be some sort of River Song sort of thing.
River Song! Yeah. I thought the same thing. Like, okay, here's a dumb theory. But it's interesting that she knew how to fly the TARDIS.
Yeah. Even and some of her lines.
Same vibe.
The way they played off each other, like, it was very flirty and romantic. And, I could easily see that.
And then Mike's theory was that we came up with was, what if the whole thing, this whole church, what if this is something River put in place to protect him when she can't be around?
Yeah, that makes sense. That feels like the kind of thing, it does, especially now that we're moving on to another Doctor, like, we'll never really, be elaborated on, I don't think. I mean, unless this church comes back in other storylines with Peter Capaldi, but it seems like the kind of thing that's probably just done.
What do you guys think about setting up, like, Clara's family or whatever? Like, do you think they're going to come back with Capaldi? I think they could end up being, like, more, you know, like a Rose family sort of situation here.
I would like that. It makes it feel more real when their personal life gets mixed up in it.
They were even back at the same housing estate.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Well, I mean, that's something you had with the Davis run is, like, all three companions, they did have, like, rooted family lives on Earth, and it did add a bit of drama and reason for them to be sort of torn between traveling with the Doctor and just staying home and taking care of things there. So I think it's good to get back to that, especially since Clara, now the mystery of, like, how she always dies and come back is gone. This character needs something else to kind of, I don't know, make her interesting, make her seem like a real character.
Make her dimensional.
Yeah. I feel like Clara's, when I'm watching an episode with her in it now, she's fun and enjoyable to watch, but then afterwards I'm like, I don't really like her that much, you know? Like, there's nothing to her, really.
The actress is good. The character is not interesting.
Right. Well, because the character came with this amazing, like, hook. And then what, now that that's gone, it's like, okay, well, what is she doing? Like, why is she even traveling?
Who is she at the core? What is her motivation? What does she want? It can't, you're going to fucking fly over all over space with some dude just because you think he's hot? That is the dumbest shit.
Well, and I was going to say, I think that's good. That's good for her to sort of, have that illusion broken in this episode when you see his relationship with the lady from the church, and then even like him mentioning, you know, Amy Pond is basically his last words, but close to it. I think maybe that's her realizing like she's not the only person in the doctor's life. And so maybe that's going to come play a role. Maybe in next season she has a boyfriend or something. I don't know if she'd be going after Peter Capaldi since he's 60.
He's not 60. He's 55. Jesus Christ.
I rounded up.
The rumor is that school teacher from the start of Day of the Doctor is going to be a companion as well.
Which I would like. That would be interesting. Two teachers again.
Mm.
What did you guys think about the little brief tidbit of Peter Capaldi we got to see?
Not enough cursing.
It wasn't enough. It wasn't long enough. I wanted it to be longer. Maybe a minute or minute and a half.
You know, I heard a lot of people complaining about it, but when I went back to think about it, when David Tennant turned into Matt Smith, I mean, all we got from Matt Smith was a few, like, frantic looks, and then he yelled Geronimo, right?
You're right.
David Tennant was the same. He basically just said Barcelona, and then that was it, but...
Exactly. Yeah. So we don't ever get much of the new Doctor, so I felt it was in line with that. I was a little disappointed that he was as, like, frantic and crazy as all the other ones had been, you know? He just makes a joke about his kidneys being a weird color, and then... He's, like, frantically looking at Clara to ask if she can fly the TARDIS, and that was it. I was almost hoping immediately we would see, a departure from what we've had with 10 and 11.
But they're always still cooking at the beginning, you know?
No, you're right. I mean, I'm sure his demeanor will be much different once he's relaxed and, has fully regenerated.
They should make him really strange. Like, it would have been funnier if you think he's looking at Clara and he's like, is this a mirror? I can't be a woman, no.
like he thinks he's looking at himself.
Yeah.
That would be good.
Just something weird.
There's a lot more eyebrows on this one.
Yeah, that's true.
Eyebrows are cool.
The final shot of Matt Smith dropping the bow tie on the ground, that was pretty...
Actually, I just thought of something. Matt Smith's line about his eyebrows is funnier now that he's got massive eyebrows in the next one.
What did you say about eyebrows?
He says they're delicate when he's got the wig off.
He does.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That was a nice touch, too. I loved the bald man.
Riding his bald head into it. It was funny.
Yeah. that was good. There was a lot of good humor. I did enjoy the hologram clothes and the family obviously seeing them naked and stuff was funny. And
it gets creepier. When they're teleported down and the angels are attacking Clara and that, and you just think both of them are currently naked and they're falling all over themselves.
Yeah, rolling around in the snow together. Yeah, that's true.
Hey, how come the angel could touch Clara and she didn't get sent back in time?
Who knows? I guess because the doctor looked at it just in time to stop it. I don't know.
It hadn't activated its teleporter thing yet.
Exactly.
It
didn't have a good enough grasp yet.
Here's the I guess this is what will sum up my irritation with the first, let's say, half hour, is that. In Doctor Who, I'm willing to concede a lot of plot holes for the sake of a good story, but it just felt like there wasn't a particularly interesting story to grant all these plot holes a pass.
Yeah.
That's what I would say.
To me, I guess,
But they acted their butts off.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And like you said, his last final speech, which I'll probably open this segment with, is great. When he's back young again and he's talking to Clara. I mean, it was perfect, what you expect the doctor to make when he's making some grand speech. But I find with Doctor Who, with mostly any episode, your enjoyment kind of depends whether or not you're willing to sort of go for the ride and just sort of accept things. So there's episodes that I end up not really enjoying because I just, the conceit bothers me, right from the start.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I enjoyed this. When I look back on it, not much happens in that first half. I mean, there's this mysterious planet. He's, lands on it, and then he's pretty much stuck there the whole episode, and you get little, glimpses of him fighting enemies, but for the most part, I mean, nothing really happens.
I really like, I think it's a second montage where he's, the voiceover is going, oh, and the Doctor fought side by side with the Silence, and there's all these cool shots of him twirling the cane and explosions.
Yeah, with them behind him.
I really like
him.
That montage. It looks really cool. I like the cane. Yeah.
Yeah, the cane was a good touch.
Did they do all that because his knee was all messed up?
Is his knee messed up? Did he
At the time, I think he had knee surgery.
Oh, really?
Oh.
I didn't even know that. Maybe.
That's why they thought they made him older. Because he couldn't move
his
name.
There was rumors going around ages ago that they said Matt Smith's Doctor was going to lose a leg and have a wooden leg at one point.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that would have been funny.
Yeah, that would have been
Peg
good.
Peg legs are cool.
He could have had the wooden Cyberman's leg. He could have just chopped
it off.
Yeah,
he chopped
off
the leg of the Cyberman.
But I don't know. I find that I was able to, like, kind of just enjoy the spectacle of it, and I didn't have a problem with plot holes or not, with everything that was going on.
The one thing I'd probably sort of regret about the episode you doing is sort of passing over the chance to use his last life as an interesting dramatic point throughout a whole season. Like, him knowing from the start, like, oh, my last life, you know, things are going to go bad, blah, 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 like, and bring more attention to it. They sort of just bring it up in this episode and then are like, okay, I'm over that now.
But that's how it's been for a while now with this show, where you're like, man, they could have used this obvious thing to their advantage for character development or moving the plot forward or whatever, and they don't take it.
Yeah, yeah.
That would have been interesting if that was built into his character from the start, I agree. Like, what if he was kind of cowardly? Like, he didn't like to put himself in these grave situations because he knew this was it.
I was starting to, like, think of a story, like, a couple of years ago or a year or so ago, and it was just, like, him regenerating and being on his last life, but then taking himself out of situations and being more, yeah, like you said, more cowardly and, like, turning his back on things, you know, until the very end where he sort of accepts it and then does it anyway.
Well, that would make his sacrificing himself for this town, like, that much more meaningful and dramatic if that was the case, if this was a big growth for his character. And I guess they do sort of address that, like, he always runs away in his box.
Yeah.
But it didn't feel real, because, I mean, really, he doesn't always run away. like, for the most part, he stays and he fights and he helps. Mm. I mean, that's...
Seriously, yeah. That's part of why he gave himself that name, that they just hammered home in the fucking 50th.
Exactly. I mean, the only exception you can make would be the Time War, but...
But he undid that!
Exactly, and then even that, he didn't really run away from. He did what he thought he had to do, so...
I also think there's a disconnect with how he sees the John Hurt Doctor, like Captain Grumpy. That guy was not grumpy at all.
Yeah, he wasn't so bad. He may be a little grumpy in the beginning.
Yeah.
He gave him a little bit of guff.
I guess.
But no, he wasn't bad.
He's seen some shit.
But, you know, to be fair, this is a man he's hated for hundreds and hundreds of years. So Captain Grumpy is probably some more growth on his part, considering he used to be someone he wouldn't even name or discuss or acknowledge. So.
Yeah, he could call him a lot worse things.
Exactly. So Captain Grumpy, I guess, is acceptable. That's some real forgiveness on his part. So, I don't know. I guess to the future. I mean, can you even speculate at this point? I don't know.
What do you guys want to see? What do you hope for with the new Doctor? What do you think his outfit should be?
Yeah, that's
a hard one.
The discussion,
yeah,
right?
I hope it's not like some sort of jacket and suit combo. So maybe something different somehow. Like,
A cravat!
Yeah, that could work.
Yeah, I mean, you've had two Doctors now wearing... I mean, granted, they were very different styles, but two suits... for the past two Doctors, you think they would kind of get away from, shirt, tie, suit jacket, kind of combo. Yeah, maybe a poncho. A tasteful poncho. I don't know.
It's really, I can't really imagine anything at the moment. I can't really pinpoint something direct.
That's probably why the show's not coming back till September. They gotta take all this time to figure out what
the costume designers are holding it up. What are we gonna
make them wear? Exactly.
I just know that Capaldi went shopping for the outfit.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he was involved in it. They always are kind of involved, but Capaldi, I mean, given that he was a fanboy for it, like Tennant was, he's very excited.
Maybe he'll just be like a Pertwee sort of lace and
capes. Oh, that would be fun.
Yeah.
He was like a total, like a twee type of a,
yeah.
Like a, what's the word? I guess like some kind of ponce.
Yeah, I don't know what he'll wear, but kind of like I already mentioned, I would like to see him almost like a fresh start. Like he, yeah, like his memory is mostly gone, and he doesn't go into every situation already knowing everything. I think that'd be an interesting arc for this Doctor. So I'd like to see that, like a little bit more vulnerable, I guess.
Togas.
Yeah, he could wear a sweet toga.
That would explain Pompeii.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah,
maybe they'll have like an old fashioned wardrobe scene where he like puts on a toga for a bit and stuff like that. Like
that would be perfect.
Clown suits and stuff, you know.
But I think I'm ready for Clara to go. Maybe
depend. She's depends gonna how
stay.
She goes.
I heard she's gonna stay for half of series 8.
Oh, and that's it.
That's what I heard or read on the internet.
And I'd be good with that. Yeah, like, she could have a little bit more closure, but I think after this season, like, I'm ready for her to...
I'm ready for a companion that doesn't have to be a love interest also.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Which I think they're already moving away from.
Yeah, I want, like, a buddy cop team.
Yeah, exactly.
And we need, like, a male companion, like, Jamie, sort of, that level of assertiveness, you know, like... The relationship between the Doctor and the male companion was something that was cool about the second Doctor.
Yeah, and Rory and 11.
Yeah, Rory.
So yeah, new companion for sure.
Who would you, if you had to dream cast your new companion, who would you pick?
Oh, I can't, I don't know. I don't know enough, like, British actresses to be able to pick.
It'd have to be Handles.
Handles?
Oh yeah, bring back Handles. That's what I want.
Bring him back. He's the best.
I mean, why not? Why we haven't had a non-human companion?
Yeah, we need like a robot companion.
At all. I mean,
yeah.
since the reboot. So yeah, why not? Why not an alien?
Didn't the fifth Doctor have a robot companion briefly? Chameleon.
Chameleon. Yeah, he's not very good though.
And then K-9 and stuff. Like, I don't know. It'd be cool to get something different, or even just a male companion, and not like.
There is those rumors about the Strax and all that will be coming back, so they might have a larger role.
Oh, yeah. Even, Strax for the new
companion. I think they're even going to give him sonic weapons and stuff in the next season.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There was some design competition about designing sonic weapons for those three characters, so they might go down that road.
So I guess that's about it. Any closing remarks? I mean, any... closing thoughts on Matt Smith? I mean, this is it.
It's my favorite new Doctor, and he's gone.
Your favorite new Doctor?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd probably say he's my favorite as well, actually.
I still got Tennant at heart. That's...
Tennant's great, but just Smith... maybe it's because him and I are the same age. I feel like I became an adult with him.
Aw. It's kind of cute.
Did your jawline get squarer as well?
No, unfortunately, no.
I enjoyed Matt Smith. I think it's going to be hard to separate him from the explosion in popularity with the show. I mean, Tennant started it, but I think it really became something else with Matt Smith. And it kind of, it's, even though the reboot is now, God, when was the reboot? When was the first season of the reboot?
2005.
Wow, so it's already almost been 10 years for that. But this Matt Smith's run really felt like a whole new direction for the show, with Moffat taking over.
It grew up.
Yeah, and the storytelling became better. There are issues where sometimes it's a bit convoluted, but I feel like it's much grander. And I feel like Moffat's trying to tell these kind of deeper stories.
They're almost psychological, you know?
Yeah, and I feel like Matt Smith will always be sort of intertwined with all that, so... I love David Tennant, but I could easily see how he'd be, Matt Smith would be anyone's favorite Doctor, and I think he is, will always be synonymous with the show, like, really moving into bigger, bolder directions. At least the reboot, since the reboot.
Yeah,
I mean, he just got some of the best writing, and then that chemistry between, Matt Smith and Karen Gillan and, Arthur Darvill, it's hard to beat that, because there was, like, an actual friendship, because they were all starting off together brand new.
And they're all, like, the same age.
And it created, like, a sense of camaraderie between them, and it really shows the way that they behaved with each other. Mm. Even this last 10 minutes that we got with him and Karen, again, it was just, like, immediately, that's who should be on the show. It makes me sad that she left, because I felt like we would have gotten a much better season 7 if she had stayed on. I almost get the impression sometimes that maybe there would have been a better story had she stayed, and Moffat perhaps didn't anticipate her leaving early.
Mm-hmm.
That's something I always wonder.
Would have been interesting to see Amy and Rory also with Clara. Like, she comes in as a third companion sort of thing, and there's, like, tension going on between all of them.
Yeah.
Or even if him just phasing between the two and them getting jealous.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. That's true. Like, he's going on different adventures with the different companions.
Because there's a little bit of that in Dinosaurs on a Spaceship, where she was concerned about him having new friends that he was traveling with.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So, bravo, Matt Smith. Hi. Did a great job. Brought a lot of new fans into the show, and we'll see how those fans stick around when an old man takes over.
He's not old.
In September. I know, but he's old for these people.
he's much older than us, so.
Yeah. He's not.
We'll all be his age before we even know it.
Before the next season starts.
Wow.
I mean, how old are you kids?
I'm 28.
I'm 26.
Yeah. Well, how do you have a kid and you're younger than me?
I didn't waste any time.
Wibbly wobbly timey wimey.
Exactly. I got to it. So I think that will about do it. Nicholas and Amanda, thank you as always for being here. And we'll revisit some old Doctor Who in a few months.
Yeah, sure, buddy.
We'll be going through withdrawals. I know I will be, and I'll happily watch some old Who.
Mm-hmm. Enemy of the World's a great start. It's a very good episode.
It is good, yeah.
And it is on Netflix, right?
It's on Apple TV, iTunes.
Okay. So I'll find it somewhere.
Daily Motion.
Yeah, exactly. That might be how I'll just watch the whole run. all right. Well, thanks, guys. And we will talk to everyone later.
Okay. Sayonara. Bye.